I'm Dr. Anthony Bolus, and welcome to Healthy Dose. In continuing our special two-part series on COVID-19, this episode, we will go more in depth on managing COVID-19 and update you on vaccine information.
Phase two studies were very positive and showed that these two vaccines, both of them from both manufacturers, elicit an immune response that results in antibodies that are just as good as what you would find in convalescent plasma. And so that's extremely exciting and very promising. And so they were allowed to go on into then phase three trials.
Dr. Michael Hoag, Dean of Loma Linda University in Loma Linda, California, and President of the American Pharmacists Association, who is currently serving on the COVID-19 vaccine work group of the CDC, will help us to sort through treatment strategies of COVID-19, along with identifying what type of vaccine may be coming soon to a neighborhood near you. More to come on today's edition of Healthy Dose.
This is Healthy Dose, brought to you by Samford University's McWhorter School of Pharmacy in Birmingham, Alabama, preparing pharmacists to transform lives. More on the web at samford.edu/pharmacy.
Welcome back to Healthy Dose. I'm Dr. Anthony Bolus. Each month with COVID-19, we keep thinking that things will improve sooner rather than later. It's been 9 months now, and yes, COVID-19 is still around. However, we are in fact getting closer to managing this condition as more research continues to be made from treatments to vaccine development. To discuss in detail on these topics, this episode, we bring in Dr. Michael Hoag, Dean of Loma Linda University in Loma Linda, California, and President of the American Pharmacists Association, who is currently serving on the COVID-19 vaccine work group of the CDC, as he first reiterates the importance of the current prevention strategies to COVID-19 and why masking up has been proven to help minimize the spread of COVID-19.
There's no question that social distancing does work. It does have an effect, but social distancing with masking is actually the most effective mechanism for preventing the virus. I realize that masking has become a political hot potato issue, but really it doesn't need to be. I mean, this is a respiratory virus, meaning that it comes out of the saliva that's in our mouth and the secretions from our nose. And when we sneeze or cough or even talk forcefully, when saliva can come out, then the virus can be spread. So it absolutely makes perfect sense that when we wear a mask, we limit the ability for other people to catch COVID from us. And so the mask is not really designed to keep you from getting COVID from other people. It's really designed for other people to be protected from your saliva. And we know that a significant number of people who get infected with COVID-19, especially younger people, are asymptomatic. So you may say, well, I don't have COVID, I'm perfectly healthy, why do I need to wear a mask? Well, you need to do it because it protects other people and it shows other people that you respect them. You respect them as individuals because you don't want to spread COVID to them. So that's why we do it. Incidentally, Anthony, I'll tell you that I'm involved in the COVID-19 vaccine work group of the CDC, working on the strategies for COVID-19 vaccination. And as a part of my work with the CDC, not just with the work group, but other work I do with the CDC as well, we see a lot of epidemiologic data. And one of the things that is very clear, not surprising, it's very logical, is that the incidence of other respiratory viruses has actually decreased because of social distancing and masking. So if you look at the data nationally for the last 9 months, the incidence of rhinoviruses and other viral illnesses has significantly declined. And in fact, after we started social distancing and masking back in the spring, the incidence of influenza dropped off completely. And it wasn't the end of flu season. It was because we distanced and we masked. And so going back to your original question, we know that the best way to prevent respiratory illnesses is masking and distancing, and then, of course, washing your hands.
There has been a multitude of reports and studies showcasing what can or should be used to help treat COVID-19 medicinally and can be rather confusing on what to believe. Dr. Hogue breaks it down to the top three available treatments now to help manage severe cases of COVID-19 within the hospital setting and what research shows to be the most promising at this time.
Well, let me just say this for your listeners. You know, if you go to clinicaltrials.gov, you'll discover that there are well over 500 different trials that have been registered at clinicaltrials.gov as being underway, looking at various therapeutic modalities to try to treat coronavirus, to treat this virus that we are now learning a lot more about. Some of those things are drugs that have been around for a really long time, and some of those are novel therapies that have not yet come to market, that are things that are in development that maybe hold promise for the treatment of coronavirus. So what I can tell you at this stage, there are three therapies that have actually had positive studies consistently showing that they improve either the duration of illness or the outcomes associated with coronavirus infection. First of all is remdesivir, an antiviral agent that is administered intravenously, primarily in the hospitalized setting. That drug received an emergency use authorization for the treatment of coronavirus because of studies that showed that it decreased the duration of hospitalized illness by about 4 to 5 days on average in the population that was treated. Remdesivir is on an allocation at this time, meaning that the manufacturer is producing as much as it can produce, but allocation means that we're trying to send it, the manufacturer's trying to send it to places where the greatest numbers of outbreaks and hospitalizations are occurring. So this is a drug therapy you're going to see used in the hospital primarily. If someone's admitted into the hospital, accessing remdesivir is probably the best first-line treatment that most hospitals are using now as a standard. The second drug therapy that has been proven effective is dexamethasone. And so dexamethasone at about 6 milligrams per dose is the dose that's been shown to actually improve ICU outcomes. So reducing the length of stay in the ICU and reduced time on oxygen and ventilator therapy. So the studies that were done on this actually were in patients who had already been put on oxygen therapy, intensive oxygen therapy, or who had to be put on a ventilator. And administering daily doses of dexamethasone actually decreased mortality and decrease the length of time that they had to be on a ventilator or in that environment. So dexamethasone also then has been proven effective at reducing severity of disease and improving recovery and improving outcomes. The good news about dexamethasone is it's dirt cheap, and because it's inexpensive and it's very widely available, it makes it an easy therapy for hospitals to use in the patients that are hospitalized. The third therapy has been around for a long time. To give you an idea of this, this is a therapy that was actually used in the 1918 flu, and it's convalescent plasma. And just as the name implies, you take the plasma from a person who has survived and fully recovered from the illness, and you administer that plasma to a person who's currently infected and suffering from the illness. And the idea is that the antibodies that are present in the plasma from the person who survived will activate and support the immune system of the person who's receiving, who's currently being treated, and that will help fight the infection. In the third week of August of 2020, convalescent plasma received emergency use authorization from the FDA following very promising results from an emergency use study that it was in place in about 2,200 medical centers nationwide. And so it does show that there's a reduction in length of stay and an improvement of outcomes in patients who receive it.
It is very promising to hear about treatments within the hospital setting, but what about treatment strategies for the community? Hydroxychloroquine has been in the news many times, but unfortunately at this time, we do not have any approved treatment strategies that show overwhelming promise within the community setting, as Dr. Hoag describes.
There really isn't anything. I mean, to be honest, I mean, theoretically, at least, we might try oral dexamethasone therapy. Orally could potentially be useful, but it's not been studied orally on an outpatient basis. We only know about hospitalized IV patients. But beyond that, really don't have anything that we can hang our hat on. There are a lot of other drugs out there, as you know, Anthony, that have been tossed around in the news. There's some that have controversy around them, like hydroxychloroquine, for example, where there's inconclusive evidence about whether or not the drug actually works. It's not an antiviral. It doesn't have a logical pathway necessarily for how it would work. But, you know, there's some individuals, obviously, who've had positive outcomes in case studies and so forth. So, but the jury's still out on it, not something that we can definitively say. And the emergency use authorization from FDA was actually withdrawn because there were some pretty negative studies out there on the drug. So right now it's just those three: remdesivir, dexamethasone, convalescent plasma. Those are the best options we have right now for treating hospitalized patients with COVID.
So how do we end the threat of COVID-19 in our world? If you said vaccine, you are exactly right. Dr. Hoag illustrates the reasoning behind getting a vaccine and how we have been able to bring a vaccine for COVID-19 to market faster due to the research that had been previously done on other coronaviruses.
Vaccine is, in fact, the best way for us to end this pandemic, helping the human body develop its own immunity so that we can fight off and prevent coronavirus infection is the ideal scenario. You know, vaccines are the most cost-effective mechanism for reducing infectious disease, and it's been that way for a long, long time. We eradicated polio, at least from the U.S. We've eliminated diseases like measles. As long as everybody's getting immunized, we've done a good job of reducing those instances. You know, so many diseases that vaccines have worked very well for. Coronavirus is a very unique virus compared to others that we've been exposed to in the past. There's no cross-reactivity between coronaviruses and influenza, and that's really important. There's a lot of really questionable things that float around in the media, social media, and other places, and people get a little confused. Coronavirus is nothing like influenza. They don't look anything alike under a microscope. They don't really act anything alike, except that the symptoms that the two viruses cause are very similar. And so people often say, well, I have a flu-like illness, or I feel like I have the flu. So the symptoms are pretty similar. But the reality is that when you get down to the microbiology of these two viruses, they're very, very different. And so coronaviruses have been around for a long time. They're not new, but COVID-19 is a new type of coronavirus that we've never seen before until last fall when it popped up in China for the first time. And so designing a vaccine for coronavirus broadly, just generally, something that works for coronaviruses, thank goodness there's actually been some research into that that's been going on for a long time, because you may remember, your listeners may remember, that we had two other coronavirus infections that were feared to cause big outbreaks. They ended up causing regional outbreaks. One is SARS and the other one is MERS. And those two, I'm sure your listeners probably remember that, are previous coronaviruses. We did not have vaccines for those two. But we learned a lot from those two coronaviruses that actually helped scientists to begin thinking about how to create an effective vaccine for coronaviruses. And that coupled with technologies that we've uncovered in recent years to enhance our body's immune system and to help the immune system to develop a strong response, has led us to be able to have what we would call rapid cycle vaccine development. So there are several different ways to attack a coronavirus and to develop an immune response against a coronavirus. And so we call those platforms, vaccine platforms. And there's six or eight different vaccine platforms or different ways that we might approach a coronavirus. And there are actually quite a large number of manufacturers that are racing to create a vaccine based on those different platforms.
Just as there are a bountiful of treatments that continue to be studied, so too are the companies that are trying to develop a vaccine. Dr. Hoge narrows down the list to two vaccines that seem to show the most promise in being a two-dose series vaccine and what stage of trials they are currently in.
Two of the vaccine manufacturers gave presentations, public presentations, at the CDC's Open Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices meeting. Those are Moderna and Pfizer. Both have a vaccine that uses the same basic platform. The two vaccines are not the same vaccine for COVID. They act a little bit differently in the body in the way they stimulate the immune system. These two vaccines are both in phase three clinical trials, both with enrollments of approximately 30,000 patients in the United States to test the efficacy of vaccine. Now, granted, these vaccines have already gone through phase one laboratory studies, phase two studies, looking at immunogenicity to see if these vaccines elicit a strong immune response. And those phase two studies were very positive and showed that these two vaccines, both of them from both manufacturers, elicit an immune response that results in antibodies that are just as good as what you would find in convalescent plasma. In other words, in the plasma that someone had survived COVID with. And so that's extremely exciting and very promising. And so they were allowed to go on into then phase three trials. So how quick will we have a vaccine? Well, the answer to that question is, how quick can the two companies enroll 30,000 people into their studies and administer what's going to be a two-dose sequence for vaccine? So the two vaccines, both companies' product requires the administration of two doses. They did early dose sequencing studies that found that in order to seroconvert the vast majority of patients, they had to give two doses at various intervals. One of the vaccines is given at a 21-day interval and the other one's given at a 28-day interval. So dose one and then dose two. And then you monitor for whether or not the population who receives the vaccine comes down with COVID. And so these phase three trials are randomized placebo-controlled trials. So half of the people are getting a placebo, half of the people are getting the under investigation coronavirus vaccine. Then those individuals will be followed.
Dr. Hoge continues on to answer the questions on what researchers are looking for in stage three trials with the studied vaccines, when we could see an emergency use declaration by the FDA for a vaccine to come to market, and who will get immunized first.
What they're looking for are two things. One, safety signals. They're looking to see if there are any adverse events or safety signals present in patients that would cause concern relative to vaccine safety. The second thing they're looking for is, does the vaccine prevent coronavirus? And they will get early signals for that pretty quickly after they've gotten enough data back out of the study. So, you know, when a statistically significant section of the participants actually, there's enough data to show that yes, coronavirus is prevented, then those companies can apply for emergency use authorization from the FDA. And based on those data, the FDA can approve those vaccines for emergency use. Now, these companies will then have to continue to follow these 30,000 people for months and months and months. We were talking probably in many cases, you know, 2 years, I would say, for the follow-up on these patients to see what the longevity of the vaccine is and how long it provides protection. So, you know, in theory, the studies have started and it's possible. I'm not saying it will happen. I'm just saying it's possible that vaccine could be available later this year in 2020 based upon an emergency use authorization. It won't be available in quantities large enough to immunize the entire population, But healthcare workers and those that are highest risk of infection or essential workers may be able to get vaccinated as soon as the end of this year. And then it'll probably be sometime in the early part of next year before we have something more widely available for the general population.
There are many patients that have specified that if a vaccine comes to market soon, they would be hesitant to get it because they don't believe it is safe. Dr. Hoag explains what goes on in the phases of trials leading up to an approved vaccine to market to help ease your mind.
What I would say is that we're looking at phase two studies to start with, because before you can do phase three trials, you have to look at dosing studies where you test different doses. You look at sequencing studies to know what the interval needs to be if you're going to give more than one dose. And you also look at safety in that time frame, and you're looking at safety markers. And so when I say safety markers, you know, there's the presence of certain signals in blood, in your body, that occur when a reaction is going to happen. Those are safety signals. Safety signals also can occur when you're talking about, you know, small numbers of people and you're trying to figure out if a side effect happens once or twice or three times, what's enough for it to be a concern and so forth. Obviously, the larger the number of people you've got in a study, the more confident you can have that you understand what the safety concerns are relative to that vaccine.
Dr. Hoag further elaborates on the safety measures of the two promising vaccines being studied and what the typical side effects that would most likely occur if the vaccine is given.
With the vaccines that are coming to market first, we have not seen any serious or life-threatening type adverse events present themselves. And so that's why they were able to proceed on to phase three clinical trials. Obviously, during the phase three trials, side effect profile adverse events are going to be monitored extremely closely, and individuals will be checked. I wouldn't be surprised if local reactions happen with the vaccines. I mean, we see that often with vaccines where we have redness at the site of injection, pain, limitation of arm movement. Those things are very common with a lot of vaccines. Won't be surprising to me at all to see that. It was, in fact, in the phase two studies that were published, those things happened pretty commonly, actually, with these vaccines. So I expect that to be the case. But at this point, there's no evidence. We've not seen any evidence yet in the studies that tell us that there's anything more concerned to be about. I will tell you, I've heard many presentations from the FDA and the CDC, and I think our government is very committed to ensuring that the vaccine that comes to market will be a safe vaccine. There's no rush job being done to shortcut safety. Safety is number one. And if we have an effective vaccine, as long as the safety profile is good, then it'll come to market. And so I have a strong confidence that the systems that the CDC and that the FDA have in place are the right systems to protect the public. And then we'll have something called post-marketing surveillance, which everybody's familiar with as well, where every dose, especially in those early doses, will be tracked. And healthcare providers, including pharmacists that administer vaccines, will have a mechanism for reporting any adverse event that occurs relative to those doses that they administer.
Will COVID-19 vaccines become an annual shot or one and done for life? Dr. Hoag discusses that we simply do not know that information yet, but it is very important for our healthcare providers, including pharmacists, to provide a multi-dose vaccine to be sure whichever manufacturer you use the first time is the same manufacturer you used the second time.
We don't know yet how long people will maintain immunity. So we have no idea if this is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime shot or an annual shot. We just don't know that yet. When we won't have the data on that for a while. We don't know yet if all of the vaccines are going to require two doses or if some of them are going to require one dose and some of them might require two doses. What we do know is that when a patient receives a vaccine of a particular brand, they do have to complete the series with that same brand. They cannot cross over and receive different brands. So if they get, for example, the Moderna vaccine for dose one, they'll have to get the Moderna vaccine for dose two, or Pfizer versus vice versa. They have to get the brand that they had.
It's getting close to flu season. Have you had your flu vaccine yet? This year will be vital to get that flu vaccine in order to help give you the best chance of not contracting both flu and COVID-19 at the same time, which could lead to poor outcomes and could also burden our hospital system, as Dr. Hoag states.
The CDC recommends this year in particular that patients be immunized against influenza in September and October. In the past, I think a lot of people have waited until October or later, October, November, December, to get vaccinated against the flu. And the reason for that is, especially as we age, the older we are, the less likely it is that we'll build longer-term protective immunity with the flu vaccine. And so in order for the vaccine to provide full protection over the entire season, we've oftentimes immunized older adults in October or later. We're trying to move that up a little bit this year. Because flu's symptoms and coronavirus symptoms are so similar, and because the risk of severe negative outcomes, morbidity and mortality in those who are sickest could be devastating if they were to contract both infections at the same time, we really want to go ahead and get people protected against influenza. So we're really encouraging to start immunizing. I use Labor Day sort of as the marker, but definitely seeking immunization in September and October would be good, and get as many people vaccinated against the flu as early as possible. Demand is up, I think, for flu vaccine, and the manufacturers have increased production capacity of flu vaccine this year to try to ensure that there's enough doses on the market to immunize people. Every patient that gets immunized against the flu represents the opportunity to reduce the number of complicating factors during the coronavirus outbreak, and can help us reduce this potential burden on our hospital system with people who wind up severely ill if they have both the infections. So, you know, just be proactive and immunize everybody you can possibly immunize with the flu vaccine right now.
Pharmacists can play a dynamic role in assisting the healthcare team to decrease or prevent the spread of COVID-19 by helping to be a part of the solution in administering COVID-19 vaccines when they become available. Dr. Ho gives some particular advice to pharmacists looking to help protect you from COVID-19.
Process for coronavirus immunization is going to be pretty different from any other adult vaccine that you've ever given. What I would encourage pharmacists to do right away is to reach out to your county health department. The initial doses of COVID vaccine will likely be distributed through county health departments, through the State Department of Public Health and county health departments. And county health departments need to know if you are willing to participate in those vaccination campaigns. Pharmacists will not be able to order coronavirus vaccine for several months and maybe for a long, long time through drug wholesalers or through manufacturers. So if you're expecting that your access to coronavirus vaccine is going to come by being able to order it directly from the manufacturer or from your drug wholesaler like you order flu vaccine, you're wrong. That's not going to happen anytime soon. The first doses of coronavirus vaccine, and maybe for several months to come, will be distributed likely through the state departments of health or through a mechanism the CDC determines is appropriate. And so that's the first thing you need to know. So if you haven't let your county health department know as a pharmacy or pharmacist that you are interested in being able to administer coronavirus vaccine and be a part of the solution of the pandemic through coronavirus vaccination, that's the very first thing you need to do is reach out to them and let them know that, hey, when it comes time for coronavirus vaccine, I want to be involved and I want to help. Our pharmacy wants to help. Put us on your list of resources to help in the community. Very, very important to do that. I'm really emphasizing to pharmacists that if you are not connected to the state's vaccine information system or registry, get connected ASAP, because we will need pharmacists to be uploading data into those systems relative to their patients' receipt of coronavirus. The CDC had made a statement about encouraging all healthcare providers to ensure that you're connected to the state's immunization information system so that all healthcare providers will be able to access the coronavirus status of their patients. How else are we going to know who's been immunized and who's not? It's really important that we do this.
For pharmacists looking to get more information on COVID-19, stay up to date with CDC. And Dr. Hoge also hosts a weekly live webinar on Thursdays to discuss the pearls of COVID-19 from the previous week at pharmacist.com.
And then, of course, just stay up to date. Pay attention to what's coming through the CDC. I'd be remiss if I didn't just let your listeners know that every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 p.m. Central, I conduct an update for pharmacists on coronavirus. It's a live broadcast show through the American Pharmacist Association. You can find information at pharmacist.com in the Coronavirus Resource Center. And any pharmacist can sign up for that. You don't have to be a member of APHA, although I wish you were. If you're not a member, folks, join up. But if not, you could join that every week. And we cover all of the late breaking news from the previous week live on that show every single week. We have special guests on that show from different weeks. Last week, we had the head of vaccine safety for the CDC on the show and talked about these vaccine safety issues. We also had recently a physician who works with the registry for individuals who are willing to volunteer to be a part of the coronavirus vaccine trials. We have a lot of different guests, and so we can help keep you updated every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time at the webinar offered through pharmacist.com.
Lastly, Dr. Hoge gives his final thoughts in describing the progress we have made and to continue to take COVID-19 seriously.
Well, I would just like to say that, you know, whether you're a consumer or a pharmacist or whether you're, you know, whatever your role is, it's important to take this coronavirus thing seriously. There have been a lot of people who died, a lot of people who've gotten very sick from this virus. Right now, things are getting a little better. We've seen infection rates dropping and hospitalization and death rates are dropping, and that's great. That's encouraging, and we're hopeful for that. Getting a vaccine will be the most effective way at preventing this virus going forward. So when the vaccine comes, know, have confidence that these vaccines are going through a process of safety monitoring and safety assurance, and what will come to market will be a safe vaccine. Rest assured that that's true. And so we want people to have confidence in that and to be eager and ready to get vaccinated when the opportunity comes to get vaccinated. And then for pharmacists, we want you to vaccinate everybody as soon as you can. Very important to do that.
Be sure to talk with your pharmacist and your physician on updates to vaccines in the months ahead for COVID-19. And please be sure to get your flu vaccine as soon as possible. We are excited to bring Healthy Dose back. Be sure to download our podcast each month as we will continue to bring you up-to-date information on topics in healthcare. Just go to samford.edu/pharmacy for more information. Until next time, stay safe and healthy out there. For Healthy Dose, I'm Dr. Anthony Bolus.